Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for hanging in there on this Monday morning. Text line, need to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. Breaking news, we're just tuning in. U.S. Supreme Court has struck down a Colorado Supreme Court decision and cleared the way for Colorado to disqualify Donald Trump from its ballot based on the 14th Amendment and some kind of loosely constructed insurrection claim. There you go. Real quick, one text before we go to our next guest. Gene, you're crawling this morning, but with GOP voters being only 28% of voters, okay, I don't believe that, and at least 20% of them are either for Haley or never Trumpers, how do you see Trump succeeding? Gene, I see you as just needing to turn off the MSNBC, take the L, and go ask yourself, how do we get stuck with Joe Biden as our candidate, as our nominee, with no chance of winning here? Well, he has a chance, but it's waning by the day. Enough of that. Let's get to our next guest. It is second Congressional District Monday here as we head into Super Tuesday. Those of you in the second Congressional District will have a choice of a number of candidates. And we'll talk more later about the strange things happening on the Democrat side. But for now, joining us, kind of running an impressive startup campaign here, never ran before, but from 2nd Congressional District, Caroline Dobson joins us on the line. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks so much for having me. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for coming on. Well, as your consultant says, the hay is in the barn. How you feeling this morning heading into tomorrow?
We feel great. You know, there's been a lot of hard work. And as you said, this has been a grassroots campaign. I'm not a career politician, never been in politics before. I'm a ag producer, lawyer, wife, mom, who wants a better country for our kids. So I'm fighting for Alabama families. This seat is winnable by a Republican. If it's someone who's a true conservative, who's running for the right reasons, and that's the message I've been trying to get across. I've been in all 13 counties multiple times, and it's truly been a blessing to get to meet so many wonderful people that are doing such incredible things in all the communities throughout this district. I've learned so much, and I'm even more inspired to fight hard to represent the good people of Alabama District 2 and give them a representative who is going to work hard to deliver results for them.
Well, tell me, get into this and running for Congress. Yeah, sure, I'll try it or I'll do it. Anything stand out to you as like, wow, I didn't see this or I didn't see this coming? I mean, you know, it's new to you and you've never done this before. So talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I've never run for office before. I currently serve on the Alabama Forestry Commission, have for about 2.5 years now. But I did grow up kind of witnessing firsthand civic engagement. When you grow up in a small town, you know the people who are your elected officials just because there aren't that many folks. And also you can't really just show up for things in a small town. You've got to take action to make things happen. And so I'm grateful to have grown up that way. I'm also always been interested in politics and had the privilege of working for Senator Jeff Sessions, working for Congressman Joe Bonner, some truly incredible leaders that we've had representing what was District 1, where I'm from. Monroe County has always been District 1, you know, is now District 2. So that's also my motivation, is to fight to ensure that we continue to have leadership who is local, who you know, like me, grew up in the district, whose roots are in the district. And I'm raising my kids here in this district. At the end of the day, I just want to be able to look them in the eye and let them know that I did everything I could to fight for a better future for them here in Alabama and in America.
Well, and you know, you have all this experience working in the past. I mean, it seems like, this is just my perception, I mean, it seems like it's just a much different world than when Senator Sessions and Joe Bonner were in Congress. Like, politics, ever since Trump came down an escalator in 2015, like, things are just really, like supercharged. And, like, you know, like, how do you, I get, I assume you try to use that to your advantage when you're on the campaign trail.
Sure. No, I mean, yes, I think politics are different now, but then you look back at, I mean, you look back at the days of Hamilton and Jefferson, and politics have always been heated. You know, what I hate to see now, though, is I think there are so many outlets for personal aggrandizement. I think folks on both parties, you're seeing kind of career politicians and sort of egotistical folks trying to jump in front of cameras and promote their own careers. And you see that in this race. You've got a lot of folks on both sides who don't even live in the district who are running, and you kind of have to question motives a little bit there. But I think that's why the American public is so ready for someone who's going to go to Washington and stand up for what's right, but otherwise, you know, keep their heads down and actually deliver results and accomplish some things that will allow opportunities to flourish, that will secure the border, make our country safer, restore faith in this nation. We need more folks to get up there and work.
Well, and you mentioned the border there. You know, every survey, every poll, national, our here in Alabama, the immigration question kind of leads the way. I assume that's what you're seeing out there on the campaign trail as well.
Oh, of course. And that's, I mean, it's getting worse by the day. And it's, you know, how many more tragedies do we have to sustain? You know, Lake and Riley, the adolescents who've been raped at knife point. And this is happening in our area. I mean, that's in Lake and Riley. That was in Georgia. The raping was of a minor was in Louisiana. You know, this isn't happening within a few hundred miles of the border in Texas. That would be tragic enough, but it's really happening in our own backyard. And we have got to have, a solution to this crisis. We've got to close the border, build the wall, send everyone home, enforce the stay in Mexico policy. And because the Biden administration has refused to secure the border, you know, we're really now at a crisis point. This is the largest land invasion America's ever experienced, really. I mean, that's what it is. So we're going to have to take some drastic steps to, return these people, deport them, because our country cannot sustain the influx of the estimated 8 million folks that have come across the border since Biden took office.
Well, and Caroline, in the past, Republicans have been reluctant to some very prominent voices, I would say, in the media try to weaponize it. But the idea that we would go around deporting people just seems, deportation squads. And you've seen how they've kind of, hyperbole and just make it sound really scary. But Republicans got to get past that, right? We got to, and I'm curious to hear what you say this, because you say it just kind of outright. I think the former president said it, but deporting people here illegally is got to be a big component of immigration policy.
Yes, and it wouldn't have to be this way necessarily if we had a, you know, under Trump, our borders were secure. You know, we hadn't all of a sudden had an influx of, again, 8 million people within 3 years. But because the Biden administration has just blatantly refused to secure the border, that means that we've got a crisis that we're going to have to take steps to remediate. And of course, you know, in a humanitarian way, but, you know, for those who are, you know, their sole crime is having crossed the border illegally, you know, deportation. But you even see some of these sanctuary cities. Mayor Eric Adams last week in New York, announced that he was going to render to ICE illegals who had committed a crime, and that he got a lot of pushback for that. And that's just that is incredulous to me. Of course, if there's someone illegal who is a criminal, who commits a criminal act, of course they should be turned over to ICE. Of course they should be deported. So we, you know, got some of that mentality still in the United States that, you know, we shouldn't even be deporting folks that come here and then commit a crime. And that's how we end up again with these tragedies that we've seen lately. The illegal that killed Lake and Riley had been detained multiple times before, but in sanctuary areas. So we've got to take a tougher stance on actually sending people home.
And when you talk about, you know, these sanctuary cities, the concept of a sanctuary city, I mean, is it, should the federal government look at that and say, hey, we're not going to have this anymore? Now, I guess you could be a sanctuary city in name only, but you need to cooperate with federal officials when it comes to immigration policy, because we're the ones who handle immigration.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely agree. Yeah, immigration is within the realm of the federal government. And so, you know, the federal government laws and regulations should trump that of any city. So I absolutely believe that the, you know, sanctuary city is status. And hopefully, again, we'll get Trump back in the White House. And, you know, some of these cities that proclaim to be sanctuary cities will then, you know, be faced with, do they want federal funding for certain projects that they need? Or are they going to insist on harboring, again, criminals, not just illegal aliens, but illegal aliens who have committed crimes against U.S. citizens.
Joined by Caroline Dobson, running in the 2nd Congressional District for the Republican nomination. Caroline, let's talk about legal immigration, though. I believe I was listening to you talk about it the other night at the debate that was on WSFA and WALA down here in Mobile. What is an appropriate level of immigration? Because listening, and there sounds like there are labor shortages in certain sectors of the economy, primarily when you were speaking about ag. Like, what is an appropriate way to handle that aspect of immigration?
Well, that's the ironic thing, is that our legal migrant worker systems, the H-2A and H-2B programs, are entirely overregulated, and there's far too much red tape, and it's just a bureaucratic mire. Both of those systems are, and those are worker programs that a lot of the industries and companies here in this district rely upon, whether it's poultry producers in the eastern part of this district, timber producers in my neck of the woods in Monroe County, and then, of course, in Sims, for instance, there are over 100 nurseries in Sims, many of whom rely on migrant work. A lot of this work is work that Americans won't do anymore. And yet, there are artificial wage requirements. The minimum wage for the H-2B program that timber owners use and timber companies use is higher than that of a similar migrant worker working in South Georgia, as if there's a higher standard of living in South Alabama than there is in South Georgia. It's over double minimum wage. And then if you're going to have, on the H-2A program, if you're going to have a farm worker drive a vehicle, which is pretty essential in any type of farm work, you've got to pay them over $20 an hour. And there's so many forms to fill out, and you are far more likely to get fined or potentially even have your business shut down if you don't fill out the right form or check the box or don't provide, XYZ, then if you are probably to hire someone who's actually illegal, that's just walked across the border. So there's such a double standard, and you have a lot of ag producers that are trying to follow the letter of the law in using H-2A and H-2B workers, again, that are getting fined and overregulated and facing executive agency action. And meanwhile, Biden is just letting all sorts of folks, foreign enemy agents, drug cartels, just walk across our southern border. So we've got to have an overhaul of our migrant worker programs in order to allow for the people that want to be here for the right reasons. You know, they want to be here to work. They want to be here to make money to send home. So I will be the first to say that we need workers, but we've got to secure our border, and we've also got to make those worker programs a lot more friendly, both to the worker and to the employer.
Well, we'll get you out of here on this, because I mean that aspect, the HB1, HB2 visas has always been kind of a stumbling block. So if you look to the Congress, it's entirely possible that for whatever reason, Congress decides that the status quo is unworkable. We need to do like a real immigration reform. Like, you know, like how do you keep that from being something that's going to trip the whole process up? Because that is a contentious part of immigration reform for a lot of folks. But I mean, we clearly have some issues here. Or is it even a congressional fix? Is it just, let's enforce what we got and everything will work out fine?
Well, I think it's twofold. I think it is a congressional fix with respect to the particular programs. I think they can be much more streamlined. And then it's also reigning in the executive branch. Trump in 2020 passed an executive order passed the Regulatory Bill of Rights, which just established some basic guidelines if there's an agency investigation into a small business owner or into an individual. The reality is you and I are far more likely to be the subject of an agency investigation than we are, a felony. It's highly more possible that I, have a small business and I don't file some form I'm supposed to file, or, maybe I haven't complied with some rule that I didn't realize is applicable to me. And so this Regulatory Bill of Rights established rules of evidence. If an agency comes after you, they're supposed to provide you with the evidence of the alleged violation. It established a burden of proof. If you're accused of a felony, you are innocent until proven guilty. That's not the case for agency investigations. There is no set burden of proof. It can vary from agency to agency. So this, required that, again, an individual or a company be presumed innocent until the agency prove them guilty. Just some basic protections for all Americans, regardless of political persuasion. And then within 40 days in office, the Biden administration revoked that order because they said it was too burdensome on agencies. So I think if that is one of my top priorities. If I get into Congress, I want to codify the Regulatory Bill of Rights, because we cannot rely on the executive branch to limit their own powers. So I think, again, the specific program, H2A, H2B, needs to be streamlined, but we also need a regulatory overhaul to protect individual citizens. And again, if someone's blatantly violating a rule or regulation, then, they can prove or disprove that. But we need to have some set guidelines to protect individuals and our small business owners.
Carol Lee, we got to leave it there. We're out of time, but thanks for making time. Best of luck to you tomorrow. Maybe we'll talk again soon.
No, thank you so much for having me. DobsonForCongress.com. Please vote tomorrow. Thank you.
Y'all check it out. Carol Lee Dobson. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.